Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Now today we've got a guest all the way from the UK, and he's written a lot of great books, and so we're going to talk to him. Robert Innes, thank you for being here.
Absolute pleasure, thanks for having me.
Robert, so where did it start for you? birth and the mother and all that, but I mean, where did your father meet?
Sunny days of 1987. I think I've always sort of enjoyed writing stories and sort of, even, you know, back at school, I think it was my favourite thing to do rather than sit in an algebra class. I was, you know, sort of doodling away and not really paying much attention and just writing about characters and stuff. But it only became... I only realised that I really sort of wanted to do writing as a career when I was at university. You know, up to then I'd kind of wanted to be an actor, and then sort of started writing a script based on all the people that I was living with that I'd hoped to turn into a big drama series, and sort of developed this passion for sort of characters and all of that sort of thing. And then in the meantime, you know, doing what any kind of student is doing, I was sort of, you know, working in a shop and doing all that sort of thing and realizing how miserable I was doing it. And then started talking to a guy called Ashley McLaughlin, who, if anybody is a reader of the cozy mystery world, you'll know him better as Agatha Frost. And, you know, he started talking to me and we started communicating. He helped me kind of build my career up and I ended up writing the first book in the Blake Hart series, Untouchable, and it sort of went from there, and I was able to become self-employed from it, and it all sort of took off from there, really. Hmm.
Did you worry about being a good writer? And I mean in the sense, like how I mean this is, were you concentrating on the words you used and your grammar and how you put together an actual book, or were you more focused on the subject?
I think you'll find it still do worry about that sort of thing. I think that what you tend to discover when you write your first one is how little you actually know about sort of the prose and the format of it all. You know, you're sending it to someone to kind of read through, you realise kind of how many grammatical mistakes you make without realising it, you know, and there's rules of grammar that you don't know about until you start doing this sort of thing. You know, kind of like page format and commas and all of that sort of thing. So you have to sort of pick things up quite quickly as you kind of go along. But it didn't... I think I was just more concerned with making a good story more than anything. You know, I knew when I remember saying to somebody when they were sending me notes back, I'm not bothered if, you know, you come back with notes that are absolutely littered with, you know, punctuation and grammar and all that sort of thing, that's absolutely fine. But as long as you enjoy the story, then I know at least I've done that part right. You know, the grammar stuff I can sort of learn. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to go all right. I think, you know, it's that sort of thing you can learn. But, you know, as long as you've got the story there, I think you've got a good basis to start off.
Yeah, yeah. Do you, your characters, like Blake Hart, and these characters, do you take them after people you actually know or people that are around you? And if so, what? How do you choose them?
Well, I think that a lot of writers will tell you that at least one of the characters in their books is based on either themselves in some respect or someone they know. I think especially when I first started writing it, I think the two main characters, Blake and Harrison, they were sort of split into who I actually was at the time and who I wanted to be. So I kind of see Blake as this sort of very much capable person who was a natural leader who could, you know, put all this stuff together in his head. And I think everybody deep down would love to be that sort of person that, you know, that you kind of follow throughout the book and just know that he will solve anything that kind of comes his way. But then, of course, you've got Harrison, on the other hand, who at the beginning was very much more of an anxious person, very sort of secluded. And I think there's a little bit of a mixture of both of us in that sort of thing. So Blake's sort of the dream person of who I'd want to be, and Harrison probably more of a more realistic as to what I actually was at the time. But I think that people that you meet, the right people will sort of stay in your head without you realising them. And then when you need a character, you'll remember that person and then they'll suddenly appear on the page.
Yeah, I think it was J.D. Horn that we interviewed that said that if you end up in his book, he really doesn't like you.
Yeah, I've murdered a few people in my books before. It's quite a satisfying feeling.
Well, that's good to know. Hopefully I'm not in there yet.
No, not yet, no.
Yeah, no. But after this interview, I'll be there.
The next book I write is about a podcast interviewer dying horribly, then you'll know that you've annoyed me. But I think so far you're okay.
Stabbed and burned and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lovely. That's the way to go. It really is. Oh, wow. How do you come up with the stories? But like, so when you're doing a mystery, some sort of crime or something going on, where does that come from? Like, where do you just have a dream, and or you?
Yeah, I wish there was some sort of deep answer I could give you to that, but sometimes it just sort of lands in your head. It's like any idea. You know, it's kind of like you have to sit and think about it and really kind of forage for your brain to sort of put stuff together, and then sometimes it just sort of lands in your head. It sounds so pretentious to say it, but you know, I kind of see it as, you know, like any kind of artist or creative person, you know, how does a painter get to know what to draw and how to put the colors together? It's just sort of, I wish I could give you some sort of definitive answer, but sometimes they just sort of land in your head. Sometimes it'll be an experience that you kind of think about and you kind of twist around a little bit to make into a story. I mean, the impossible crime genre is something that I never really thought I was capable of doing. I was a massive fan of Jonathan Creek growing up, which obviously is based all around the impossible crime genre. And I, you know, I love the process of not just looking at who done it, but how done it. I think it's just a fascinating way of looking at mysteries. So once you kind of get yourself into that sort of corner, you need to really kind of open your brain as to other aspects of the case, you know, trying to make something look impossible whilst coming up with a satisfying answer. So I think it's sometimes it happens organically, and sometimes I have to really sit there for weeks and try and think of something that seems reasonable and it has a satisfying ending to it. So it varies.
What are your influences then? Like, what is it that you draw from, like other writers, or is it movies or Netflix, or is it shopping, like.
I think I do tend to kind of base a lot of my style, I suppose, if you like, around TV shows that I watch, because actually what I've always wanted to be is a screenwriter. I'd love to kind of have my own TV series or write for a TV series in some way. So whenever I write, I always sort of write anything with it being in mind for television. So, you know, the first episode of the Blake Hart Mysteries, I was sort of, I think, even calling it an episode now, I sort of was looking at it visually and how it would look on TV and then sort of writing it in book form. So I'd say people like David Renwick, who did Jonathan Creek, Stephen Moffat, one of the writers of Sherlock, and, you know, all those sorts of great mystery TV writers, you know, and I watch a lot of crime drama, and I just think people like crime. I think they like murder. I think it, you know, it's one of the darkest things that you can do to another human, and yet you can do murder in so many light ways. It's quite a strange thing that so many people enjoy reading about what is one of the worst things that can happen to a human being. But it's just the way it is.
Can I ask you about that?
Please do.
That's interesting. I mean, like, so I've read three of the Blake Hart Mysteries. I've read the first three, and I you know, loved them, and I recommend them.
Oh, thank you.
And I did. And they're very, I mean, I do think they, to me, I would call them cozy. Like, is that fair? Would you call them?
Well, apparently, I mean, I kind of agree with you, but I've been told by people who are very up to date with their cozy fiction that apparently they're not. I don't know why. No, actually, I do know why. Apparently, because it's all about a police detective. That's the thing that stops it from being cozy. Blake was sort of an old lady who was knitting and making cakes, that would be cozy, apparently. And some of the subjects that I deal with aren't really sort of the sort of thing that kind of appear in cozy, apparently.
But
I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean. It's kind of got that, everything apart from that, you know, the village atmosphere is a very cozy sort of thing to do. And, you know, even kind of the short, the sort of novella form of it is quite cozy.
I mean, the thing that, and I would say that they end with a resolution, right? Where, like, the crime is punished and the bad people are actually bad. So Raymond Chandler says that, like, people enjoy the crime genre because it imagines, like, a moral universe, right? Like, where bad people always get what's coming to them. I mean, do you think that's why people like crime fiction? Do you think that's why they like your books?
I think he's probably right there. I think a lot of crime stories, like you say, they sort of have that sort of circular format to them. So you start at the beginning where all these horrible things are happening, and by the end of it, the bad people have been punished, and the good guys have worked it out, and everyone lives happily ever after that hasn't been murdered or thrown in prison. You know, I think it, I think it's a nice sort of reliable format.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's too bad. Don't your criminals get away?
Have any of my criminals got away? I don't think so yet. Although now, maybe they will.
No.
Oh, come on. Have some intrigue. You know, have that great criminal killer keep getting away, and
that's sort of a Moriarty role sort of thing. But eventually, Eventually, they have got to be found out eventually, surely, haven't they? Or do you think that it's sort of kind of, as the longer the series goes on, the longer this sort of villain gets away with it?
Well, yeah, or you could discover who they are and then develop that through time, right? But it'd be fun. But that's just me. I'm morbid.
I'm morbid.
You sound like you're quite like Dexter. Apparently, that's got. I haven't seen that, but apparently, that's kind of got a serial killer as its main character. So
yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, that's gone on for years. So I'm sure you know. Yeah. That format does exist.
You have these stories, right? Doesn't there have to be? I think the Blake Hart Mysteries certainly do this, but like even in, I'm trying to think of like real dark. And certainly in Dexter, like, there's a bad guy and then there's a worse guy, right? And the worst guy... I wonder how many people want to read about a world as bad as the real world, you know? Like, there are enough real people to get away with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's also a form of escapism, isn't it? You know, no matter how bad your life is, there's probably a crime book out there featuring characters that are having a much worse time than you are.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't like to have the resolve in a book. personal. Yeah. Because it's just like if you read a romance, which I never do anyway, but...
Me neither. It's far too cozy for me.
Yeah, there's something... And you just don't want it to be happily ever after. I don't, because it's not real. And I think I'm too old now to look at it that way. Because if it's a real story, if it's a real type of crime and story and passion and all this stuff, you know it's not all going to be perfect.
No, it's true, but I think that's kind of what sort of appeals, especially in the short kind of novella form. You know, I think people kind of go to it for a sort of escapism for a couple of hours and then they can go back to their lives. You know, you put the book down and that's all fine and dandy. I do quite like the idea of doing a series where it sort of just continues all the way through, but I think it would have to be a quite different format to what I've been used to recently.
Yeah, it's something you have to work into, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but that's interesting. That's interesting. Do you think you're going to be doing writing for the rest of your life type thing? Or are you going to carry this on?
Well, I hope so. I mean, it's been a few. When did I release the first one? 2016, I think the first one came out. So it's been going for a while, and I'm just about. And I'm just writing the 11th, I think, in this series at the moment. Wow. I'd like it to continue as long as I can, and obviously, like I said, you know, with screenwriting, I'd love to have Blake on the TV at some point, but I think that's very much kind of whether luck falls my way or not.
Well, you could have me play Blake.
If you like, yeah. I don't see why not. Can you do a British accent?
Not really.
No?
But I could practice.
Yeah, this is a great audition. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And no, actually, do you think there's a difference when you see British crime fiction compared to American?
Oh, that's interesting. Yes, but it's difficult to kind of explain why. I think there's a difference between. I don't know if you guys are aware of a show called Midsummer Murders that airs over here. Yeah, yeah, it's sort of the quintessential, everything that you think of when you think of a British murder mystery is Midsummer Murders. You know, it's. I think that the star of it, John Nettles, once said that it was fairy cakes and bloodletting. You know, just very specifically Midsummer Murders. You know, just that very sort of almost cozy in itself, apart from the police people. But then, of course, when you think of something like, you know, L.A. Law or something like that, you know, you've got all your FBI people and lots of blue flashing lights and city murders and all that sort of thing. I think American crime drama tends to be a lot bigger and sort of, and it tends to go on for years and years and years. You've got so many American crime dramas, haven't you?
Well, so many American crimes.
Yeah, well, that's true. But then you've got just as many over here, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. It tends to. I think the US ones maybe are a bit grittier, but then there's lots of UK gritty ones as well. So I think the differences are there, but I think it's an interesting thought.
Mm. Well, I think there's a real mannerism that comes with British mysteries. There's also sort of not written rules. The way people treat each other in the UK crimes, there seems to be more of a... I don't know, it's hard to explain. It's almost a way people talk and act around others in these crimes that you won't see those types of behaviors in the US. It's kind of a free-for-all in America.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know if either of you have watched this. It's an older comedy show called Reno 911. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not familiar with that. No.
Well, they have this episode where Officer Smiley comes over, and he's of course like this English police officer who, you know, he's just so friendly and charming. And then as soon as they're out on patrol, he turns out to be like far more brutal than the American officers, and he's
fantastic.
You know, just. Like horribly like corrupt and all these other things, and it's just a fun play on this perception, I think, of, you know, the UK and especially the show presented over there.
We had a show over here fairly recently which featured sort of the other way around, like an American cop coming to film in the town that I live in, actually.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember what it's called now off the top of my head. But it's and it featured that sort of thing, you know, sort of an American cop who's very much used to sort of doing everything that American cops do, coming to sort of this quiet English town and sort of trying to adapt to the way that we do things over here as opposed to the way that he's used to, which is quite... and I think you're right, it's an interesting sort of comparison to see how the two kind of blend together.
And I think just I think there's a lot of stereotypes that can be undermined. You know, like there's a lot of overtyping of the of those expectations.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think you sort of see your American cop as sort of standing in the shadows with a cigarette hanging between the teeth, sort of staring at the scene beneath, you know, before them, and the English cop is sat there with a cup of tea and you know and sort of trying to work it out very politely.
Blake's got his e-cig, right?
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? Everything that Blake does with his e-cig is so very based on me. It's ridiculous. I've been trying to quit smoking for so long, and an e-cig is basically the only way that I can to kind of get off the cigarette. So whenever you see Blake kind of have an internal struggle with a cigarette or his vape, that's very much just me at that moment stressing about the book. Thinking I need a cigarette, but no, I've only got my vape, so I just throw it in the book instead.
Electronic fag.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid that word because you don't.
Well, we
it's
can
a different word over there, isn't it? That's true.
Well, you know, it's all free.
please do. So, please do.
Yeah. COVID-19, how does that affect you and your writing? Has this put a dark cloud on your mind?
Yes. Frankly, yes.
Good.
I can actually reveal, who do I think I am? But I can reveal the book I'm writing at the moment, the next Blake story, which I can say is called Dollhouse.
Ooh.
Is based now. It's very much... the lockdown is happening, the pandemic is happening in the world. It's not massively, it doesn't massively affect the plot or anything like that, but it's there in the background. And I sat and thought about whether that was a good idea or not for so long, and then realised that I had been so blocked mentally of how to create a, you know, which happens to all writers, I suppose, but I was kind of just sat there thinking, I don't know, I've forgotten how to write, I've forgotten how to make a story happen. And then my son is trying to think about why that was happening and realise it's because I've been sort of locked indoors for the past 9 years or however long it's been going on for now.
Someone told you a story 9 years ago because it just happened a few months, but that's okay.
Yeah. and sort of thought, well, you know, how would the characters that I've been writing about be dealing with this? And it sort of kind of led from there, the story that I'm writing at the moment. So, and I know a lot of people might kind of hear that and think, oh, God, I don't want to read about that. It's everywhere at the moment. I want escapism. And I understand that completely. I really do. But I'm also of the kind of viewpoint that there is absolutely no point in hiding from this thing. It is everywhere. Right. We know it's happening. And not talking about it isn't going to make it go away. So... You know, and I'm not planning on making it a factor in future books. This will be the only one that it happens in. But I think, for me personally, I just need to get it out of my brain. And I think that it's the only way that I could kind of make it happen and sort of make it work whilst we're all sort of trapped in this sort of situation.
I heard it was a hoax.
It might be a hoax, yeah. It's a really funny, really funny joke.
Rob, with the Blake Hart, when I read the summary of 10, I, for some reason, thought that meant it was the last book, because it's kind of his story coming full circle, right?
Yeah, it was kind of supposed to be. And then I kind of thought...
so like, what? Do you have you know, it's, what's your plan?
No, God, no. I just think that 10 came around, and I was really, really happy to have come up with 10 impossible crimes. So I can't remember who said it, but somebody said... I was reading an article and somebody said that was talking about the impossible crime genre, and somebody said that you can, most writers who attempt to go into impossible crime can come up with maybe 3.
Oh, wow.
And then they were completely out of ideas, and I'm in the process of writing my 11th, which isn't supposed to sound boastful, but it's something I'm incredibly proud of because I love the genre.
Yeah.
And you know, and the 10th one is novel sized as well, so in all fairness, it could quite happily end at the end of the 10th one. But, you know, I didn't kill any of the main characters off, so I think, why not carry it on? You know, if I could think of a, if I could think of a good enough story, you know, people enjoy reading them, and I enjoy writing them when I've got a good plot in my head. So I don't enjoy writing it when I haven't got a good plot in my head. That's a completely different thing. But which, you know, maybe some people will argue that I've never had a good plot in my head. But it's enjoyable to write, and I, you know, as long as I can think of stories to go with them. You know, because it's been a big part of my life in the past 4 years. So, you know, I would like to write other things as well, but, you know, I think it's just a case of planning a series out and starting a new thing. So while I've got this series ready to go sort of thing, keep them going as long as I can.
Absolutely, yeah.
And research. What kind of research do you put in, and where do you go for research?
My Google search history would get me thrown to prison for years.
Well, we're not talking about the porn sites.
No, I don't know. Although, well, no. But it's trying to research things like, you know, the amount of times I've typed in the words, does that come up in an autopsy? You know, I think it, several things that would raise eyebrows. But yeah, no, a lot of it is, you know, sort of research you would do on the internet. I'm quite fortunate in the respect that my mum is a nurse. Mm-hmm. So medical stuff, it's very helpful to kind of ask her about, you know, would a spanner around the side of your head actually kill you, or would it sort of wound you, or do you know, all those sorts of questions.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and I've got a lot of family members in the sort of emergency services, so it's quite helpful to sort of ask the odd, you know, ask around. But yeah, a lot of it is sort of going on Google and sort of just typing in awkward questions and seeing what comes up, and just hoping that I don't click on images, because some of it's just really quite weird. But I think that's just that's the joy of doing crime. I think you have to ask some odd questions into a search engine to get answers that sort of a realistic.
Yeah. Well, it's better than calling the police and asking them.
Yeah, I think so. Although maybe I might try that one day. Yeah. I might get a more honest answer.
Well, you just never know. You might also have to get arrested.
Exactly. So
that could be fun too. Does it ever bring you down when you get into dark subjects?
No, not really. And I have to say, I do. There's a side of me that sort of enjoys writing about that sort of thing. You know, as much as, you know, we were talking about it being escapism for the reader, it sometimes kind of feels like escapism to me as well. You know, in the Blake Hart series, there have been there's been a couple of quite dark topics that I've covered. And I try never to get too overly gory or anything like that. But if there's a topic that kind of fits into the story that I'm writing, I try not to kind of shy away from it. You know, I'm not writing cozy, so if I want to write something a little bit darker, I've kind of got that freedom to do that. But no, I wouldn't say it ever brings me down per se.
Hmm. Yeah, you ever think of crossing into the true crime area?
Well, to be fair, true crime is, you know, I've had a look online at true crime stories and sort of taken a few little bits and pieces from stories. I can't think of any at the moment, but I think when I was first starting out, I sort of optimistically typed into Google true impossible crime stories, you know, things that had actually happened that I could kind of pinch and turn to real things. You'd be amazed at how selfish killers are, that they haven't done many impossible crimes in real life. It's really quite really quite inconsiderate of them that I can't just pinch their work and turn it into a fiction. But
you better start writing to some of them in prison and tell them, look.
Yeah, you know, how hard is it to try and kill someone in a locked room? I mean, come on, people, use your imagination.
Yeah, think about things.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. Well, you know, so this, now this last book of yours, the last Blake Hart, I was always
called. Yes.
The last Blake Hart thing, was that came out about a year ago. So now, are you doing another one now or something else?
Yes, I'm writing a new Blake story at the moment. Called Dollhouse. I'll be releasing the cover in the next few days. And it sort of concerns how can I say this without spoiling it too much? It concerns a woman that lives on her own in the middle of the a lockdown. So she's, because she's an older lady, she's very much sort of in the vulnerable category. So she's very self isolated, and there is a doll in the house, and this lady will possibly meet a gruesome end, and it may possibly look as though the doll has done it.
Oh.
Who knows? Who knows? But you know, was it the doll? Maybe it was the doll. Maybe it wasn't the doll. You'll have to read it when it comes out to see whether it was a doll or not, whether Blake takes Barbie to prison. But,
it sounds like my life.
Well, do you have a scary doll in your life?
I'm an isolated old lady with a scary doll in my house. It's a lockdown. I'm not dead yet, but...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No.
Yet. I'd keep an eye on that doll if I were you.
Yeah, I'm gonna tie it down.
Yes, but the end of the tenth story kind of, it gave itself to maybe continuing, maybe ending there, so I kind of went down the maybe continuing route.
Now, do you have a purpose in when you write a book? Do you hope that people that read that book come away with something other than the story itself? Is there something you want them to get out of your book?
I think it very much sort of depends on the story that I've written. There's been a couple of things over the series that I've kind of thrown in there that, you know, hopefully. People, you know, I've kind of discussed mental health a couple of times, and I always think it's very important to discuss mental health with anybody, really, because one in four of us will always be affected by some sort of mental health problem throughout our lives. And talking is one of the most important ways to get through that. So I've sort of maybe tried to, especially, you know, in the character of Harrison, especially early on, he was sort of quite damaged by what had happened to him. You know, and then Blake later on sort of starts to suffer from things. And the problem with Blake is that he's a very sort of he's not as open with his emotions as Harrison possibly might be. So it's, which I think is a lot of men's problem when it comes to mental health. You know, we don't really like to discuss about sissy things like feelings and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's that sort of thing that I kind of like to maybe get off cross to readers. But apart from that, you know, I think the thing is about within the Bella form, you know, you kind of throw in as much as you can, but you're maybe sort of limited as to what you can do with certain stories within that page limit. So, but then, you know, there's no rules that say that it always has to be that. So if a plot comes along that I think of that I think can be a good message to readers, I will throw it in there. But I don't tend to sort of write a story thinking, right, I'm going to talk about the National Health Service in the story. You know, it just sort of happens organically, really.
Wow. I noticed that you do a lot of self-publishing as well.
It's the only one, yeah. It's all I've done so far.
Do you like it better, or?
I think it's easier. I think it's a way for writers to get themselves noticed. You know, about, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that wasn't available to anybody. You know, you had to be sort of professionally published. Whereas being self-published, it means anybody can do it, as long as you've got everything that you need and you can write a story and you can get yourself. I mean, Amazon even has a service where you can get your own book covers and all of that sort of thing. So it's possible for anybody to release a book now, which I think is fantastic. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be doing this now if it wasn't for being self-published. So I'm all for it.
How many books have you published now?
I've released 10 Blake stories, and then there was two that I did in another series called The Golden Silver Mysteries, which didn't really take off, but I did two of them. So this will be my 13th book that I'm writing at the moment.
Wow, look at you. Just go. I mean,
this is the... Yeah. It never happens quick enough, though.
So how long does it take you to write one of these books, then?
Oh, God knows. I mean, it's sort of... Sometimes, if I can sit down and concentrate and focus on it, I can do one in a few weeks. Sometimes if it's a hard thing for me to write about, you know, whether my brain's not in it or whether writer's block is plaguing me or something like that, it can take months. It just sort of depends on it varies, but I'd say from a few weeks to a few months.
Do you follow like a schedule or routine when you're writing?
Oh, I wish I was capable of that. I really do. I try desperately to try and do that, but it doesn't always work out that way. You know, you sort of plan over the weekend. You know, it's Saturday, right? Monday morning, I'm going to get up at 9 a.m. and I'm going to write lots and lots of words, and it's all going to be fantastic. And I'm going to finish the day with a cup of tea, and it's all going to be ace. You know, and 1 p.m. comes along on a Monday, and I'm sort of playing solitaire on the laptop. You know, it's that sort. It never works out that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, I understand that. Totally understand that.
Procrastination is an evil mistress.
Awful stuff, right?
Yeah.
So you must. How do you get react to all the fans?
I mean, the majority of people that I've kind of communicated with about the books have been absolutely lovely. What I found really interesting when I first started it, because it's, I mean, the books are mystery, but they're also categorised under LGBT because the two main characters are gay. And what I found really interesting when I started was that, you know, you'd put it under LGBT mystery, which is what the stories kind of come under, and you get a lot of people that are there for both sides of it. And then you get some people that are there purely for the LGBT side of it, and I will have reviews asking me where the sex is, which to me is utterly bizarre. You know, as if they're reading gay fiction purely for the sex. And I am living proof, I can tell you, that not all gay people are sex mad people all of the time. It's not something that sort of litters their lives at all times. But it was interesting to me that that was sort of the kind of thing that came along with having gay characters at the forefront. Because actually what I wanted to do was I wanted to write a mystery series that happened to have a gay person at its central. You know, it's just because, why not? you know, it doesn't have to be wall-to-wall, you know, it doesn't have to be wall-to-wall gay sex for it to be, for it to sort of justify a gay character being in there. And that's very much kind of what I wanted to do with this series. And I've had very kind reviews from people saying that it's nice to see that, you know, that the lead character happens to be gay and that it's irrelevant really to the main mystery, which is kind of what I was going for. But yeah, and a lot of people I've spoken to have been very kind, very lovely. You know, the series has its fans, which is amazing to me. You know, you never think, when I first started, I was happy when I hit my first 10 sales. You know, I felt like J.K. Rowling after that. And now, you know, here I am writing book 125 or whatever it is now, and it's going, and most of them are still there, which is lovely.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I guess it would be a natural evolution, but of gay characters to come out of just being in a bathhouse or cruising, you know, and that sort of
yeah. Exactly.
I mean, that's going to take time. Society takes a while to catch up. You know, they just expect that.
You don't get a lot of. I mean, you know, I don't read as much as I should, admittedly, criminally. But you know, you don't tend to see a lot of gay people at the forefront of mysteries. You know, unless it's been written specifically for that purpose. You know, you've got there's plenty of kind of gay mysteries out there with the front cover of a sort of six-pack policeman on the front cover, staring smolderingly at the camera. Really what I wanted to go for. Well, that's, you know, that's my own personal private collection of thoughts. You know, I don't tend to write about that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think that's what Greg, I think the last show that we had done together, we talked about that because some of the covers were, I frankly don't like them. They're very,
Well, they're there for a purpose. They're there for a purpose, you know. And they're there for a very specific type of audience. And I wouldn't criticise that type of audience because if there's an audience for it, then why wouldn't you write a book about it? You know, it's you know, writing. It's very much, you know, it's very nice to sit here and say, yes, I'm a writer and I have an artistic leaning and I love the people who follow my artistic leaning. Whilst at the same time, this is my job and I want to make money from it because otherwise, you know, there's no point in me doing it. You know, if nobody's reading it, then I'm doing it wrong. And there is a huge, and I've been advised by people to sort of go down that line as well. It's just not for me. I don't know. I wouldn't know how to construct a story like that. But that's not a criticism of the people that do write those stories or the people that read those sorts of stories. But, you know, I looked at that and thought, well, that's one way of doing it. And then I'll try my way of doing it. And it's worked okay for me.
Yeah, well, if it hasn't got pictures, what's the point?
No, exactly.
You know.
Well, but, I think. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, keep going.
I just, you know, one thing, Rob. Now that you bring this up, I mean, this is a topic that I was just reading people posting about this back and forth today on Facebook. You know, there's always a little bit of a dust up about this topic, and you know, one of the, I guess the concern that I take away from it is. And I will say that my books are, you know, have a heavy kind of secondary romance subplot in them. And some of them have sex, not all of them. I guess my concern is always in any genre with a book that fetishizes or like dehumanizes people and uses them as objects, right? Where in some cases, I think it is very disheartening to see that treatment of gay men. And that is worrisome to me.
I completely agree. I mean, to me, you know, it's very prevalent, actually, in a lot of British soap operas at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got I think all the soaps at some point have had that sort of gay couple at the forefront, you know, both very anguished and sort mm-hmm. of going through their issues and all that sort of thing. And they'll have mm-hmm. fans that are, you know, absolutely obsessed with them. You know, and there are GIFs that are over the internet. There are memes everywhere. Mm. There are fan art and all of this sort of thing. Mm. And you know, these characters are absolutely idolized. No matter what these characters might do,
right?
You know, and I remember I don't know if you guys will have heard of it. There's a soap opera over here called Hollyoaks, and they were doing a storyline about gay domestic abuse.
Mm.
And it was just bizarre because domestic abuse is one of the worst things that can happen. The worst thing that can happen in a relationship is horrific.
Right.
And just the way that the fans were reacting to it was sort of very, like, you know, I think the characters, Brendan and Stee, and, you know, Brendan is just so, he has so much inner conflict about his sexuality that he loves Stee so much, and he's just taking it out on him. It's so beautiful to watch and so sad to watch. It's like, no, you're talking about a violent relationship. There's no sort of, you look at these characters in an almost pornographic type of way, and that's not the story that people are trying to tell. Right. I think that, yes, you know, gay people have come a long way in quite a short period of time. But there's two extremes to it. You know, you've got that sort of people that will idolise anything that a gay character can possibly do, and then the other side, obviously, is the less pleasant side, you know, where bigotry still exists. But it's, you know, I've always tried to kind of settle along that middle ground of these people exist and they have a normal life and they are normal people, and this is what these stories are about.
Right.
Yeah, and it's true. Do you find that, crime fictions that are, you know, not based on gay characters or have them as the leads, do they write any differently?
This is the thing. I think that if you can, that's the main basis of it. If you can write, because at the end of the day, it's about relationships more than anything like that. And a lot of the time, you know, I always try to see the relationship itself almost as a separate character. You know, as just as you can say, what is Blake like as a character? What is Harrison like as a character? What is their relationship like? Is it a funny relationship? Is it an angry relationship? It's about the relationship rather than the people that are in it and how that relationship works between these two people. And which is how a lot of straight, relationships are written, and should be how a lot of gay relationships are written. It doesn't matter what gender these people are, it's about the relationship between them.
Do you find that you're kind of put in a category then, being having to go into LGBT?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, like I say, you know, when you've got people writing reviews saying, well, the mystery was good, but where's the cock? You know, it sort of takes away from what you're trying to do, you know. And people come to you for that, and that's absolutely fine, you know. If people kind of come along for that and then sort of get on board with what I've done, then fantastic. If there's not enough sex in it for them, then that's absolutely fine. But I'm not the sort of person that really would write, you know, graphic sex scenes in a story that doesn't warrant it. You know, I'm not afraid of writing a graphic sex scene, but that would be purely plot-driven, as opposed to, it's been 6 pages since I saw a bare chest, I need to get one in here now, you know.
Well, yeah, and I think that brings to a point, but I think that in itself is a problem with being in the gay crime fiction section, I think, isn't that? Because people are expecting it then.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I say, I think it's been my experience, but I think now, you know, now I'm this far into the series, I think people know what they're going to get from, you know, and how they know what, you know, and I get people saying that, you know, there's not enough love between Blake and Harrison, and I'm kind of, you know, and you take that on board, you know, I think you always have to listen to what your reviewers are saying, just to some extent, but Yeah, I think that it's never going to be anything that I do, particularly in this series, you know, on another series maybe, but in this series it's not something that particularly grasps my interest, particularly.
You could always do X-rated versions of the same books.
I could. You know, if that brings me more money, then maybe I will one day, you know. Blake After Dark might be a series that's coming your way soon, people.
Yeah, Blake, where does he go at night?
Well, and who wins?
Yeah, he's always disappears at midnight.
And what exactly happens to Betty the Goat in that time? You know, there's possibilities are endless.
Oh, boy, and what does he like? Okay, well, this is exciting. So,
there you go.
Now, do you have a website and stuff where people could go and find you and find out?
I have a Facebook page. If you type in Robert Innes, I think it's Robert Innes Author. It's been a long time since I've had to advertise it to anybody. Hang on a minute. I'm just typing on my phone. Yes, if you type in Robert Innes in groups, it will be the first thing that comes up in my phone anyway. But with a little logo that says Robert Innes with a man silhouetted behind it. And yeah, that's the page for people to follow for all the latest Blake Hart news. I'm also on Twitter at RobInnis87. So please follow. That's very sweet of you to say. I'm actually 93.
Wow.
But
don't look a day over 60.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Well, that's amazing.
I hope that doll gets you.
Oh, my dog will get the doll first, hopefully. So that's fantastic. I'm glad you've taken some time to talk to us and stuff like that. And
no problem. It's been lovely.
So what's your daily process? Just checking out what you do with yourself now. Are you writing full time? So that's all you do?
Supposedly. I try to be writing whenever I can. If I'm not doing the Blake stories, I'm also trying to kind of break out into the script writing world. So there's plenty going on in terms of writing and all that sort of thing, but it's always just the stuff that gets seen is always the difficult stuff to make appear. But yeah, the Blake Hart stories will be there in the background for a while to come, yeah, I hope.
Okay. Well, we're going to have you posted on our website and your books and stuff like that. So people listening, if they need to find it, they can just go right to it. Well, it's certainly been interesting. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about
your
books and your writing and all that stuff. Our guest has been Robert Innes. Thank you.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.